Honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Hello everybody and welcome to another edition of The Warm Down. Today who's joining me is Matt Wilson, and that is a guy that you probably don't really see in front of the camera too much, but he's also one of the CEOs of Ball Street. And coincidentally, and I honestly, I'm being totally honest here, I thought I would be sitting here laughing about how many we put past you this week. He's a Huddersfield fan. I mean, there's not many of them online. I've managed to find one, and the opportunity for that is a time now when he's going to be taking the piss out of us, and absolutely rightly so, because from a United perspective, that was embarrassing. Matt, just talk to me. I'm sure you're absolutely buzzing.
Mate, I'll be honest with you. When you invited me, obviously, pre-match to come on, and I just thought...
Yeah, it was Friday, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I was like, do I really want to do this? Like, because we've been playing bad. Like we have been playing so bad to the stage where we just can't get out. And we'd got into this system where we were just going backwards, straight back to the keeper, and then trying to play keep ball, essentially, in our own box for some reason. There was no pace to what we were doing. We were dog shit. And then we're playing you. And I was almost like, I don't even want to do it. So I was doing this podcast, thought, well, fuck it. Well, we're going to get pounded. I'll just go on there and, you know, everyone expects us to get pounded. And credit to you, you actually kept it. Because I thought once we beat you, I thought there's no way he's going to want me on here.
Oh, this is real life, isn't it? At the end of the day, we win, we lose, we draw. It is what it is. And I thought it'd be really interesting, especially after we lost here, to get the perspective, because give us a little bit of the background on what's happened recently at Huddersfield, because from a lot of people's perspective, they have no idea about Huddersfield. They probably don't even know where it is, a lot of people.
Yeah, well, I guess if we're a club who, you know, we have history in like in the 20s, we won the Football League 3 times in a row. So, and you know, we had like Dennis Law, we discovered him from Scotland and brought him over when he was 17. Even Bill Shankly was the manager of Huddersfield before he was Liverpool. So we've got history, but obviously we're talking a long, long time ago.
It's all
so, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, since I've been supporting him, and I've been going now since I was like 6 years old, so I've been going like nearly 35 years. And although there's been a couple of moments where we've been decent, Steve Bruce was the manager once and we were knocking on the door of the Premier League. We always, whenever we got near it, we'd bottle it. And there was almost like a belief within the club, within the culture of the club, that we were losers and that we were not actually, we didn't have what it would take to get up there. So I'd given up, really. And I'm quite happy with that. The club's been in actual danger of going under a few times. Been in administration, had like 8 pros at the club. And we've been in situations where really I just wanted the club to survive because of my family, you know, people from back home. There's always a game to go to, and usually you've got, you know, local lads playing, that kind of thing. So that's all that football was. And you know, it was just nice to go back home, go home at Christmas, catch a game, you know, go down to some southern games, that kind of thing. It's all about family. And then we got this guy called Wagner from Dortmund B. And again, it was just like, okay, it's a Vogue pick because Klopp was at Liverpool and doing okay. And then all of a sudden, he just seems to have changed the whole culture and belief of the club to the stage where on the 4th lowest budget in the Championship, which is low dough, right? He managed to just kind of have us playing football where we were, you know, we were going to places like Norwich and winning, places like Leeds and winning. And how he did it, I've no idea. But
he actually plays football as well, don't they? Because like when I did the analysis of you guys, and I said, like, it's not like you're not stoking it like that old, I mean, Stoke don't even stoke it no more, but like, you're not stoking it. You've not got a load of units. You don't pack the defence and the midfield. Defensively, you're quite shambolic at times, actually. There's not like a real fierce defence. And as you said just before we went on air, like, you'd been passing it around the defence. You didn't really have any sort of go forward recently. But Wagner has brought this sort of on-the-floor possession style of play, hasn't it? And you actually try and play football. That's when I was looking at the Huddersfield Spurs game a couple of weeks ago, and I was trying to think, I thought you'd get goals in that game, because I do see you going forward, but I do see you leaking a little bit at the back, although, you know, wasn't exactly the case this weekend for you.
Yeah. I mean, last year, we were the best football team in the division, without a shadow of a doubt. But really, because we had the 4th lowest budget, we didn't have an adequate sort of options up top. We were literally Just a very like thin squad, not that deep. And you know, we certainly, if we'd have had a proper striker up front, not you know, insulting Naki Wells for what he did, but he's a guy that probably plays off a big guy. We play this 4-2-3-1 formation, and you need that striker to be attacking the ball in the box. They need to be a presence, need to be able to win a header, get across a man, etc. And we just didn't have that. And so last season we had a lot of chances, but it didn't necessarily get the goal. So we ended up in the playoffs, and we ended up, you know, going up at Wembley. And this year, and this is what you don't really think of, right, is that, so we got up in the playoffs. It was like 6 weeks after Brighton, 5 weeks after Newcastle were promoted. And when you're going from the fourth lowest budget in that division to playing in the Premier League, you've got so much to do. The kind of thing that, you know, the average football fan, I guess, doesn't think of. You know, it's a big shift of personnel. You're trying to keep some kind of continuity of culture and style or philosophy and tactics, etc. But the club's just got to do so much stuff just to get ready for the Premier League. You know, you're talking about probably a marketing department that might have had like two people in it, and all of a sudden you've got a, you know, the opportunity to build your following, and you think about the infrastructure that's required to build a channel or build an audience. So in every aspect of the club, we've had to sort of scale up and do things quite quickly. And we've tried to play this same way of playing, but essentially with a new team. And, you know, we've brought in a lot of new players, but we're still short. So for this last four or five games, and the game against Tottenham, for example, you're talking about, we had one striker and we had no number 10. So Tom Ince, who we brought in to play on the right, is playing number 10. Mm. And because of that, we've like lost our way, but been playing this same formation. So we're struggling to get out. And we have, like, I was really worried because against Tottenham, you saw one of the goals, we just kind of gave them the ball on the edge of our own box and really making these kind of like little errors. So, I think that what I was worried about was just playing that same way against you guys. But I think that we played a bit of a different formation. It was essentially 4-1-4-1 that morphed into a 4-3-3. No number 10 as such. It was more like, as Wagner put it, three number sixes. So I'm quite encouraged that I've actually seen him adjust, because we've played the same way pretty much the whole time. And without the players to do it, and against the quality in the Premier League, I thought, this is just asking for trouble. And as if we keep doing this, we're just going to get pumped every week. So, it was refreshing to see a slightly different way of playing. And wonder, you know, I really liked what Mourinho said, actually, when he said it was about attitude, and it was about, after 2 minutes, you could tell that there was one team that wanted that. And I know he's kind of speaking to his own players, but as much there and trying to get them wound up for next week. But it was a surprise, but you know, a great day for the club, I guess.
Was it to you that I mentioned it, that prior to the game, when I said, at some point he's going to switch up the way he plays and he's going to try? It was to you, yeah. So I could see that sort of coming. I just didn't know when it would be, because obviously you're still talking about a professional club, you're still talking about a top-level manager, and you're still talking about a top-level analysis department, and at some point they're gonna look at what happened at Spurs and some of the other games, and they're going to say, can't play this way, we're going to have a plan B. I got a lot of respect for people that do that, when they look at what's happened, yeah, and then they apply something different, try something different going forward. Yeah. In my analysis, I said, I still don't think they was going to have enough time to implement it and make it effective against United. United didn't show up. You defended well. You limited the chances that we had, and you capitalized on the errors that we made. And I got to hold my hands up and say, yeah, it's a pretty embarrassing result for Manchester United.
Yeah,
that's football, and that is why we fucking love it, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, all week I actually felt down last week when I thought about football, because I was.
You text me saying this might be eight on Saturday.
Yeah, I've been conflicted about getting into the Premier League the whole time, to be honest with you. And some people don't understand that, because some people think, why wouldn't you want to be in the Premier League?
But it's too far, like.
Well, it's just what it's become in a way. And like, I've always felt personally that I'd rather reign in hell than serve in heaven. And, you know, my little club, which is, like I said, I'd given up. I honestly thought it would never, ever happen. And when I've seen the Premier League, and I see clubs like Stoke that, you know, ultimately are just up there. They're not winning anything. It's not like they're getting to cup finals. It just feels like you're just making up the numbers, essentially. And I, you know, we've been up and down all the leagues, and I've had several promotions at Wembley. Great days out. I've had relegations where you've been upset, and you know, life is about feeling the highs and the lows, and you know, knowing the agony of defeat or the ecstasy of victory. You know, that's what real life's about. So I would much rather have been up and down like we have been than sitting in the Premier League for 10 years, kind of just eking your way through, and you know, fine, you're delighted when you play a top six team, and if you get a win, then awesome. But you know, that's no way to be, and I don't know why, but I've seen us get pumped all over, right? We got murdered at Fulham last year, we got murdered against Bristol City last year, and no one knows. So I was kind of worried about, in your Premier League, there's no hiding, right? Everybody's talking about it. So I was very, very, very worried about, you know, about losing 8-0. Yeah, I thought it might happen.
It didn't happen. No. But talk about Yorkshire for a second, right? Because apart from what's going on in the North East, all of those clubs that populate the M62, you know, Huddersfield, they obviously never had a big Premier League presence. Obviously, it's a little bit longer ago than that. But Bradford, yeah. Leeds, what's happened to Yorkshire as a county when it comes to football?
Well, I'll be honest with you, it gives me great joy.
Even Barnsley had a period in the league, didn't they?
Well, to be honest, right, when Bradford got up, I fucking hated that. That was the worst, right? And then Barnsley got up as well, and that was just horrible too. And you know, there's Leeds and the Chef Wednesday, who are both clubs that, like, I know
both the Sheffield clubs, really, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But I think Sheffield Wednesday in particular, and Leeds in particular, are very, very, how would you say, arrogant.
You've got quite a big following, both of those.
Big following. And they, like, we call our name for Wednesday is the Massive, because they just think that they're so big, and almost that you know, just because they're so big, then they should just get handed promotion at the start of the season, that kind of thing. And there's that culture around Leeds as well, where, you know, they look down on us. So to get up into that league is, it's been worth it just for that. Like, and just to have the ability, because I went to a Leeds supporting school where I was literally the only Town fan I knew. And, you know, so every single weekend you're pretty much unhappy because your team's shit and everyone supports Leeds and they got into the Prem and all that kind of stuff. So it's just great to message my old mates, just sort of saying, oh, look, if you want to get along to a game, you know, have a day out, then you're welcome. But I know you like your grassroots football, so like just giving them stuff like that. So yeah, but the whole, I mean, look, I think that there's got to be, right, a bit of a thing about the money that's involved in a club, the city that it's in, what it can attract in terms of, you know, sponsorship, even in terms of players, you know. And I think that there's no getting away from it that some of these, you know, northern clubs, that they're struggling, you know. And a lot of those clubs in Yorkshire, you know, have been finding it pretty difficult as well. So I think that to have actually got into the Prem is a big thing for us. And I kind of, if we go back down again, honestly, I'm fine with that. I really, genuinely, I'm totally fine with that. But I feel that there's actually an opportunity for us at the moment, because the club's in, you know, fairly decent shape. We've got a really good owner. There's a very strong relationship with the fans and the club and the players. Even though getting a ticket's been a nightmare for some, like, it's really hard to get tickets now, which is again something that I hate about the Prem. I just used to be able to roll up, Steve, mate, and just pay on the gate. I decide in the morning, right, I'm going to drive to Ipswich, and you just go pay on the gate. Now there's all these queues and priority tickets, and it's quite difficult. But yeah, we've got a really good owner who's a Town fan, and I think that bodes well for the future, especially if we keep Wagner, because he's a bit of a boss.
I do like Wagner. From what I've seen of him so far, I do like the look of him. I do think he tries and plays football. You know, I don't think there's a right or a wrong way, but I think he's doing it the right way, if there is a right way. The one thing that I don't like is, though, that I heard that he's closed the under-16s downwards in the academy and kept only the minimum requirements for the league with the 18s and the 23s. What's all that about?
I don't know, you know. Like, I was really surprised when it happened. I've got a mate who's whose son was playing in the under-16s or whatever, and basically they've all left. I think United have picked up a few of them as well.
I think we've got five, yeah.
Yeah, it was just a shock. I'm not privy to really what goes on there and what's driving it, but I was surprised. But you know, that said, it's not like the academy's actually has been that good for us, really. Like, there's not that many that seem to have come through. I think maybe the cost of doing it are big, and you know, maybe they've got another plan. But yeah, it surprised me. It really did.
I think that there's got to be a move towards becoming organic with clubs, and whether that's realistic or not, I think that the FA, when they look at the small percentages of the England managers, I mean, I don't really give a fuck about England, but I do care about the organic nature of the club, because at some point, let's say this, Huddersfield can't compete in the transfer market with the Premier League teams, can they? So what other options do you have? The other option you have is you look in the lower leagues for those rough diamonds. You can definitely do that with a good scouting network. The other option, and let's face it, no one's buying another Mbappe at 150, 160 million. But surely if someone could invest half of that or a quarter of that into an academy, you're going to yield a couple of first-team players over a few years, surely.
Yeah. I mean, look, I agree with you on paper. But that said, a lot of times you bring in people through your academies and then they just get nicked by a bigger club anyway. So I don't know if it's a bit of a fool's errand. I mean, I think that what I'd like to see is kind of proper reform in the game. Because, you know, what you see at the moment is you see a few of those top teams, City for sure, Chelsea in particular.
Oh, with the loan thing.
Mate, it's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Ultimately, they just stockpile a load of players. They pick the best ones from all the surrounding teams. They bring them into Chelsea. Fine, they've got a good system there, good coaches, good facilities. They make these players better. But then they loan them out. And you end up with about, 50, 60 players out on loan or something like that. And ultimately, what they're doing is it's like they've been allowed to stockpile property. That's what it is. So they have this asset which is going to mature over time, because every couple of years, the value of the rights goes up. So the more that every club's got to spend goes up. So if they keep hold of these assets, they loan them out, let them develop, and then they're going to be selling them on for average players for 10, 15, 20 million quid. Now, them stockpiling these assets, that means that Watford aren't able to get as good of players. That means then that, so it goes down the system to the stage that in the Championship, you're not able to get hold of these players. So you're desperate to loan in some quality. You loan them in, you let them get better for Chelsea. They go back to Chelsea, and then Chelsea flip them for 20 mil. Now, you know, in systems like the NFL, you've got an active playing roster of 53 players, and you've then got a practice squad of about 8 players. But if someone's not in your 53 and another team wants that player that's not in your active roster, they can offer a contract. Yeah. And if they develop and he does well, then it's to their benefit. And I much favour a system like that, because, you know, if every club was allowed to have, right, you've got a 25-man playing roster, then maybe you've got 10 guys that you can loan out or do stuff with, then that just means that the people like Casey Palmer that we've picked up on loan from Chelsea this year, or Izzy Brown, who we had last year, you might be able to pick those up as players and own the player. And then if they do great and develop with you, and then you're selling them to Chelsea for 20 million or 30 million or something like that. So the whole structure of the game is ultimately geared up, like the whole system, mate, as we all know, it's geared up to look after those at the top of that system.
Couldn't they do something along the lines of what we kind of already have? So at the moment you have your Premier League squad, the under-23 squad and the 18 squad. Now, surely we could say something along the lines of each of those squads registers 25 players. There's 25 slots in each of those squads, gives you 75 players. No team in the Premier League can say that's not enough, right? Yeah. So if you get 5 injuries to strikers, they've still probably got someone in the 18s. And if they're in the 18s and you've not got the bollocks to throw them in, well, that's on you. Yeah. But they should probably, a 75-player roster for every team going into the season. And players who aren't in that roster, there should probably be something along with the PFA where they go into, maybe not a draft system, but they're on, a free transfer list.
Yeah, exactly.
So if you can't register them, you can't keep them.
Yeah, and a way that might work, so they have this thing, again, using the NFL model, called the waiver wire. So say that you know, one team released a player, then they go on the waiver wire if they're under it's something to do with age, but they go on the waiver wire, and basically then teams have got a waiver priority based on who picked someone up last week. So say I picked someone up last week, then I'm at the bottom of the list. So you know, it's then just again, it's got quite a fair way of allocating players. But yes, I think something like that would just be so good for the game, because what we all want to see is a fair game on it, on the pitch, you know. And in order to do that, you really need to have a bit of a fairer game off the pitch. Mm. But all the rules seem really set up to support them big teams, you know.
And I think the under 23 leagues, as it is, it's just bollocks, for want of a better word. There is no better word. It's just bollocks. It's vanilla. It's bland. It's such a weird shit tempo that it doesn't prepare players. I mean, Scudamore brought it in and changed it from 21s to 23s because he said that's the average age a player makes his debut in the Premier League. And you go, okay, nobody who's made it to be a top-class player has made their debut past 21, I reckon. I think if you're good enough, you're already being known about by then. You're already being blooded in by late teens, 20, 21. No one at 23 is making the debut and going on and making it at the highest level, I don't think. We need to make it harder. We need to be a bit more ruthless, I think. Not making it easier, not making it fluffier for them. Because that the 18s has got a little bit of a bite to it because it's a two-age group sort of year where, you know, there's players that are now having to step up a little bit to play with players that, you know, have got maybe 2 years on them sometimes. But that under 23 league just has completely missed the mark a little bit. Anyone who's 19 or over that's good enough is playing first-team football. Anyone who's younger is playing 18s and below and is building themselves. This 23 league is just like a farm of players about to get loaned out that aren't good enough for the first team.
Yeah.
It's not producing winners, and it's not producing good football, and it's not being invested in. Like, I'm disappointed in what United are doing with it at the moment because we've not invested in that under-23 side for a long time now. And the good players are coming in and moving on loan or coming straight into the first team, the likes of Fosu Mensah, Tuan Zebe, or they're being sold at 20-21 for nominal fees to championship sides. Those that are left, if they're not a teenager, they're not going to make it. They're just not good enough. It's as simple as that. And we're now bottom of the table we're in. We won it 18 months ago. And you're like, this isn't acceptable. This isn't acceptable from a United perspective to give so little fucks about this league.
And
I don't know what you guys are going to do. Are you just going to recruit at 18, just going to be like, put a flyer up in the local park, like, who wants to come play for the 18s? Yeah. First 25 here, get a shirt, like.
Yeah, I know. I've no idea. I think it's fascinating. But I also think that, God, in England, like, we've not been the best at producing quality, have we, really? Like,
I think we do ourselves a disservice. That generation of Rio and Beckham and Scholes and Ashley Cole and Sol Campbell and all that lot, that was a team that could compete with any in the world.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of that came from the Lillishall stuff, which clearly worked. I think Michael Owen was a part of that. I think even Alan Smith and that was part of that.
Yeah, that's right, he was, yeah. But if you look at, I don't know what it is, though. Like, there's something about there's something about the culture though of our country in a way, and like what it produces. I still don't think that there's a winning, ruthless kind of brutal killer instinct. It's quite rare, you know, like in our sportsmen and certainly in our football. I mean, if you were gonna look back at because we've been a country that's always had infrastructure. We've been a first world country. We've had facilities. I remember we used to, you know, teams like Turkey and stuff like that, you'd be playing them and you'd be winning 8-0 like in international friendlies. And so that doesn't really ever happen anymore. Like, you know, most teams have got pretty good now. And certainly we just don't seem to have an advantage like we probably once had in that regard. But if you were to look at every country and you were going to take every single player from that country's past and you're going to pick a team together and then do like a World Cup from the history of time, like, where would England come in that?
Do you think potentially quite high, actually? Not the highest, because I think you've still got... I mean, just look at this year's France squad and Germany squads, and you're like, their C or D team could probably give England a real good run for the money, and that's not like exaggeration, that's like fact. But I think over the time, I think you look at some of the England sides in the 80s, you know, and some sides that didn't even qualify for World Cups, actually phenomenal sides with the likes of Brian Robson and Kevin Keegan and that in there, unbelievable footballers. And then you look at the noughties, and we failed to qualify for the 2008, was it 2008 we failed to qualify for? And that's with the likes of Beckham and Gerrard and Lampard and Rio and all of
that,
these players.
With Broly, that was that one.
And at the time, you was having English sides dominating the Champions League. You had Chelsea, Liverpool, United, even Arsenal managed to get to a final, winning European Cups, being represented in finals.
But I always think that there's a false arrogance that comes from the club teams doing well. I remember that era when it was like, always two English teams or three English teams in the semi-finals of the Champions League. But, you know, Gerrard was putting it through to the likes of Torres, you know. Mm-hmm. Lampard was sitting alongside Essien and Makélélé and you know, Drogba.
If I think of that 2008 final, United had Wes Brown, Rio, Scholes, Owen Hargreaves, Rooney. Pretty good English core. Chelsea had Lampard, Ashley Cole, Terry. Well, that might have been it. That might have been it. I think Wayne Bridge might have been on the bench, maybe. A few English players in there. English captain, whatever. But that's at the highest level. Like you said, we still had Gerrard, probably the only one really at the top level that was English in that Liverpool side. Arsenal, around that time, would have had the likes of barely any Englishman, actually. But, not really anyone that springs to mind at that era for them. Possibly Sol Campbell was on the wane, I think, by then. But, there is definitely a false arrogance that English clubs are doing well, so therefore English national teams should do well. I don't think it's helped by a lot of the policies that the FA implements, and the FA could definitely help themselves. They could easily implement some sort of homegrown thing, because you don't have to necessarily specify nationality in that, because Pogba classifies as homegrown for United.
Right.
They could say, you've got to have X number of homegrown players in your 25 squad, as we mentioned earlier, that 25 squad in the Premier League. If you said 7 homegrown players, a lot of teams would have to rethink what they're doing. That might make a lot of, you know, those also ran. What you've got to fix is those shit players that just hang around, filling up spots in teams because they're on big wages and they've got a decent reputation, but they're technically a bit shit now. That's the problem. It's too many of them clogging up the system for the exciting youngsters to come through. That is the issue, I think. But I don't know how you get around that.
No, I think that it needs to be some of the rules or some of the measures that we've been talking about, like you were saying there with homegrown and limiting the amount of roster spots as well or amount of players. I think definitely. But just getting back to that World Cup of the annals of time, like, I don't think the England team would. I think we'd probably get out of the group. I think that we might get into the second, we might get into the quarters, but where, you know, you know that Argentina, Brazil, Germany, Spain, you know, Italy, you know, these are teams time and time again, even when they're not necessarily on at their best, they've just got that mettle, that determination, that way of playing where they don't panic. We get into these moments, the whole country's just panicking like mad. You watch the players, they're panicking.
Well, do you know why? You know? Because we qualify from bullshit easy groups. We haven't lost in like 112 games. It's not that many, but we haven't lost in like, I'm sure it's about 15 years or some shit, in a qualifying stage. And yet, we're not prepared when we get to a final. No. They're bringing in this, I think it's three leagues, or A, B and C level of international football in Europe, where there's going to be promotion and relegation. And I think if you're in League A, I'm probably butchering this, please forgive me, but this is the general outline of it. I think if you're in League A, there's 8 teams and there's 4 or 5 qualification spots out of that league. Mm. If you're in League B, there's 2 or 3 qualification spots, but there's promotion and relegation. And then in League C, there's like 1 or 2 qualification spots. So you can still be a third tier nation, win that league and get to the World Cup or the Euros or whatever it is that it's going to happen for.
But is that what that's getting introduced, is it?
I believe that's on its way. I think it's from next year that it starts. But that's going to prepare the likes of England better than playing San Marino and Slovakia and all the teams that we always beat, and we go 10 for 10 in the group stage and everyone gets excited, and then you come up against a team that actually knows how to play football, like a Germany or a France, and we get slapped and it comes big down, crashing down to earth for everybody, and no one can understand why. And you're like,
it's just like, but you see it, right? Okay, so I know this is a football podcast, but Conor McGregor versus Floyd Mayweather. There was a guy in there boxing that was calm and that was just like economical with his movement, with his energy, and Conor was not so. So he was nervous. You could tell he was a bit panicky, and he was kind of like almost just kept jabbing, even though, like, rather than real shots, he was just kind of trying to keep them away. And that's what England are like in a tournament. Like, do you know what I mean? They're just not calm. There's these players that act like they're amazing and are capable of being amazing when they're playing for their club side. And then they're playing in this tournament, and they just look like they don't want to be there. That they look like they're unhappy, you know, and they definitely, even when we're not even playing a great side, they're just panicked by the occasion. And the amount of nervous energy that they seem to kind of just, like, do you know, the last one, we played Wales, and we were, like, losing to Wales, and we just got, I think Rashford scored in like, the last minute to kind of win and pull it back. So we were shit, even before we got to play Iceland. I just don't get it, but...
There's no pride. There's no... I don't think people feel that they're allowed to be proud to play for England, and that's a multitude of complicated reasons for why that is. But yeah. I don't think people are proud of being English. English nationalism seems to be a dirty thing hijacked by the right wing side of stuff.
Yeah.
I think there's the press expectation because it's interesting to write about and it gets clicks. I think that there's this overreaction every single time England play that you can't have a discussion. And then there's the hyper commercialization of the Premier League, which all feeds into the same sort of thing, that there can't be any general assessment about it, because like you said earlier, like, the Premier League sides are some of the most elite footballing sides in the world. Yeah. So people can't comprehend that our national team that hosts this league can be mediocre. But when you look at the cold hard facts, England are probably a top 8 national side in Europe, possibly the world, maybe top 10, let's say top 10 worldwide side at best. You know, are we top 1? No. Are we top 2? No. Belgium team, player for player, absolutely shits on that England side. Absolutely shits on it. Belgium, it's about the size of Greater Manchester.
And they play with a freedom. Like, they play with, like, a rhythm and a movement and an energy where they're expressing themselves. Like, you just England play, like, they look like they're...
I think it's the pressure. Like, I think it's the pressure of playing for England with that ridiculous press expectation.
I think it is, but I also think, you know, like, my personal view is that I think that the FA, I just think that they're not actually trying to win it. I think that they never do. Like, the managers that they bring in are a joke, you know, like they just are. Big Sam, come on. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, even Southgate now, it's just like, come on.
Can you imagine sitting in a dressing room and Gareth Southgate goes, right, lads, this is how we're going to beat Germany. You're just looking at him like, is he fucking serious?
Yeah, did you remember that penalty you fucking took at that time? You know what I mean? Like,
could Southgate inspire you to do?
Yeah, I still haven't forgiven Southgate for that fucking penalty. You know what I mean? Like, sorry, am I allowed to swear? I'm a bit swear.
Yeah.
I just think that they've got to get, to be honest, it's someone like a Mourinho. It's someone that's going to come in and that's actually geared towards the mental aspect of the game. Because that's what it is. That's where we lose it. Because we're as fit as any other team. They can hit free kicks. They can hit penalties. You know, that they can do all these things as human beings. But it's just when they're brought together in that occasion, the chemistry is wrong, and the way that people feel is clearly wrong. It needs someone that can actually galvanize a group of people and that can actually enable them to reach some kind of collective chemistry whereby all those things that you've just listed there don't matter, because actually they're fighting for something. You know, they need to be galvanized, and there's ways that you can, you know, that you can build teams. And that's like what Mourinho did, you know, really well at Chelsea, is that he always just made it about him. He'd just say this mad thing and it just kind of took the pressure off the players. I think it needs someone like that. But also you could tell that they would die for him, you know. But people like Sam Allardyce, Roy fucking Hodgson, like, trying to relate to these young kids that are just there on their Instagram, you know what I mean? Like, it's not happening. You need someone that they can get command their respect.
Joe did a really good job with hindsight, was Sven.
Yeah.
Quarters and semis.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ultimately where we are. I mean, I think when you look at... when I look at United this season, I look at the Champions League, I say... quarterfinals is minimum expectation. Semifinals is overachievement. That's the fine margin that we walk on. I think as England, you got to say second round quarterfinals is the minimum expectation. Anything beyond that is over egging how good we are. We're not that good.
So yeah, exactly. But how good you are, right? It kind of almost doesn't matter. Like it does if you're playing something like FIFA, where you know that the guy runs at 95 speed and his shot's got 98. You know, like that kind of thing. But when it comes down to people, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, tactics can always out. I mean, look at that France and Portugal in the summer. That France are winning that game 99 times out of 100 on paper. Yeah. There's no way they do.
But it's like poker. Did you play poker at all?
I've not played it for a long time. I used to play it a lot when I was in the army, though.
Right, okay. Well, you'll know about poker then. It's about anything but the cards. It doesn't matter if you've got the best hand. It's about making them feel that you've got the best hand. And that's where someone like Mourinho, the reason why he picks up trophies is because when it comes down to that game, when it comes down to that semi-final, that occasion when people are nervous, he's just got a way of making that other team feel a bit more nervous and getting his players calm. And you know, that's what it ultimately takes. It's going to need. It's like with Huddersfield, like what Wagner did last year. Like, I've never been to a Huddersfield game in my life where we've been 1-0 up or 2-0 up with 5 minutes to go that the whole place hasn't been shitting themselves, right? Until, like, Wagner, like, halfway through the season, it was like, it got to the stage where we weren't nervous because he'd done it and he'd made them believe. And they've got this whole thing about no limits. And this terrier spirit, but it's like believing with no limits. And it's become a bit of a slogan at the club, like, you know, it's something we all kind of like live by. And that's what it needs for the England team. It needs someone that's actually able to galvanize that bunch of people and make them feel different than they've done in every one of these tournaments over the last while.
That starts with the FA and their philosophy of, instead of being about fucking raking in the money all the time, they need to be about actually building a football philosophy from the ground up.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is that the under-17s are at that World Cup at the moment. I think they're in the semi-final. They've got a fucking excellent chance of winning it, arguably without the best player. With Jadon Sancho's back at Dortmund playing first team. And he was allowed to play in the group stage as an agreement with Dortmund.
Right.
Where they had like Mexico, Chile and Iraq, where they was always going to qualify. Now they're in the semi-final. It's about to get serious. They could probably do with Sancho to unlock a couple of doors. But you know, if England under-17s win the World Cup, the FA are going to hold it up like, look at what we did. They are, aren't they? And ultimately, it's because you've just happened upon a very talented bunch. And from the 17s to the 21s at the moment, you've got some unbelievable footballers in there. But do you know how many are going to be playing first-team football when they get back? It's less than a handful. And that's sad. They should all be rewarded by, you know, getting blooded into the first team.
Yeah,
I think Gomez only got a shout at the end of last season, so Mourinho could say that he had the youngest United player in the Premier League, youngest Premier League player at United. I think that was the only reason he gave Gomez his shout, not because I think that he's got his eye on him this year to you know, slowly introduce him. I don't think he has, and that's sad.
There's a lot of in life, isn't it? There's a lot of young kids that look like they're world beaters and don't quite make it, or you know. And I think that there's I kind of slightly worry about young players at big clubs and how, because you know, I know what it's like when you're a young, or when things are going well and you're a young guy and you feel like, you know, you're undefeatable. But imagine what it's like to be 16, shit up football, you know, everyone telling
you debut at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
And actually playing better than Rooney, who you've just replaced.
Yeah. I mean, it must be, you know, it must be hard to keep people's feet on the floor when it's like that, you know. And I remember, I don't know who it was now, but there was some guy that spoke out about it and was saying that all these young guys that are coming in with their, like, Louis Vuitton, you know, wash bags and stuff like that, but I forget who it is now, but it was someone that was a name that had been there, but he's managing at a lower division club, and he's talking about how all these players are acting the part rather than being the part, you know what I mean? But I don't know. So anyway, with United this year, how do you think that? Do you just look at it now and think, "Fuck, City are that good that it's not going to happen," or do you think actually we could just claw this back over time? Like, how are you feeling about it?
I avoided thinking about it the last 24 hours, if I'm being honest. I was at a party today. My mum's done some raising for some Macmillan Cancer Trust thing today with one of those coffee mornings, and just had loads of cakes and shit. And everybody, like loads of family members there, they obviously all want to talk United. Like, oh, what do you think of that yesterday? And you know, I've just got the same default answer, like, oh shit, wasn't it? Like, I don't want to get any deeper in it than that with anybody. But I think ultimately, you know, I have thought about it, and I've had a chat to Jaden about it as well. And I think we've lacked leadership. I think we've started to notice the lack of Paul Pogba. And I think we sort of kid ourselves with some of the earlier results that we got immediately after his injury, where we were slapping teams still because we were just that much better all over the park. But we're still fragile. We're still a team that David Moyes managed. We're still that side. We're not that far removed from that. And even though that isn't that far removed from what Sir Alex did, winning the title in his last season. Yeah. Do I think we're going to win the title? No. Do I think we're in the mix for it? Yeah, I do. Yeah. And I think City are going to come crashing down to earth at some point, because that always happens. They always start like this. Last 3 seasons they've started their first 10 games, gone off like a rocket, and everyone's awarded them the title and they haven't won it either season. Yeah. So is that going to happen again this season? I don't know. We got to find out. They look better, I have to admit, worryingly. They look better this season than they did last season under Pep. I thought he was getting a lot of plaudits that he didn't warrant. This season, the main thing, I thought last season everyone was talking about the style of play that City had, and for me it wasn't interesting. They passed it round between the keeper and the centre-half. That's not football for me. This season it's way more direct. They're way more ruthless. They're way more attacking, and they're way more potent for it, and they are fearless. And what they did to Chelsea was quite worrying. When you see that Chelsea have then since slipped to Crystal Palace, and then nearly slipped to Watford with Marco Silva, who's doing good. Maybe it wasn't the big result we thought when City went there. United getting the result we got at Anfield, maybe that was the result we thought. Maybe that wasn't the result we thought after they get slapped off Tottenham. Maybe that was showing us what we should have done and how brave we should have been. Ultimately, it's October and no one's winning the league in October. I think it's a long season. I think United definitely need Pogba back. We'd be interesting to see what happens when Zlatan comes back. We miss Bailly. We miss a couple of players. And I know, talking to someone with a budget level that Huddersfield have got, you're like, oh, yeah, great when your 100 million quid's worth of players comes back. I'm sure you'll be fine, yeah. But that's you know, it's tough at the top, isn't it? Every game is a cup final for the likes of United and that. So you have to be that 10% better, that 15% better every single week just to get a result Stoke can walk up and get. I don't know. As long as we're in touching distance at Christmas, I think Mourinho's the kind of guy that can really start to turn the screw on an opposition manager. But he's got to be in with a chance. If we're 8 to 10 points or more away at Christmas, we're not going to do it. And I think when it unravels for Mourinho, it unravels fast, doesn't it? And I think United, if they're being prudent, need to be lining up a replacement for him right now, because I think if he fails spectacularly this season, I think he'll walk, to be honest. Yeah. Or he'll do this thing that he normally does, which is he gets himself sacked somehow.
Yeah. It's funny. I'll tell you what, though. He probably is spoke about a lot, but Sane of City, he looks amazing.
De Bruyne's getting a lot of the plaudits, and rightly so. Might be the best player in the league at the moment. But yeah, I mean, it's probably quite easy to be an attacking player in that City side at the moment, because you've got so many options around you, so many difficult players. Defences are going, who the fucking hell do we mark? Do we mark him? Do we mark him? Do we double mark him? This guy gets a bit of space. So it's all clicking really nice for him at the moment, and I hate it, but what can you do?
Yeah, but that's the thing, mate, is like the amount of teams that have set off and had a good start, and then things can sort of dip and wane from Carter.
Especially when it's going to happen.
It's getting winter. I think you seem better set up for what did they used to say, Stoke away on a Tuesday night than they do. I guess we'll see. I'd quite like Tottenham to do it, though, to be honest with you. I'd like that.
Prove Pochettino's got it in him.
No, I think it's just because, you know, as a I'm a neutral in the Premier League, you know, and I am a total neutral, and I always go by occasionally players that I get into, and or like managers or little groups of players. But I never really stay like loyal to a team, because I remember like when Shearer was at Newcastle, like that seemed a good story. So I was right into that, you know, the hometown hero coming back. I like a narrative. And I just think there's something about having watched Spurs, you know, so often and all the arrogance of Arsenal. And then even when they've had their moments, like Arsenal won the FA Cup last year, which kind of eclipsed Spurs, you know, finishing above them in a way. Yeah, I mean, that was funny, and it is, it keeps on giving, but there's something about, I'd quite like to see Spurs do it just for the, you know, it's nice to see someone that's been losing for a long time get that win.
There's definitely a narrative in the Premier League this year of, there's definitely one set up between Mourinho and Pep that the papers are running with, that everything's falling apart with Jose and everything that Pep touches is gold, and that's been the way for a little while, I think. But that's something that they're really talking up, and you're putting everything up head to head the way that's going. But there's also narratives, like I said, with Spurs. There's narratives with Klopp and Conte, and that there's a lot of interesting characters. And I think every team in the Premier League needs to just ride out this next couple of years, because there's far too many good sides, players, managers in this league that I think anybody trying to do anything that isn't already established is going to really struggle. So I think everyone just needs to, like, you know, keep it tight, not allow themselves to get exposed too much. And I think even like flipping managers constantly as well is probably not a good idea in this current climate. But
it's not, and that's the thing, mate, as well, is that, like, there's so many good teams, like you said, there's so many good teams, so many good players, and then people are throwing dough at it, right? You know what I mean? They're throwing City, United, you know, Arsenal, even Tottenham, like they're spending money. Liverpool, they're spending money, and there's a lot of good players, but only one of them can win the Premier League. Like, it's only one team that can do it. So just, if you don't, it's not necessarily failure, you know what I mean? But it's just that I think that the way that the media, the way that social media is, it amplifies it, doesn't it? And I think it's part of why I don't like being in the Premier League. It's like when you're in the Championship, no one cares. But for you lot that are out there on the front line putting your face on it, you know, you can't hide. You know what I mean? It must be it must be tough when you actually, because wherever you work, if you're a United fan, you're going to be, there's a Liverpool fan, there's an Arsenal fan, there's a City fan, you know, like when you're in the top teams, you're always going to get it. Like, I'm quite looking forward to tomorrow, A, because there's a couple of Man United fans at work at our place, so I'm even going to get in early tomorrow. but there's also a very funny Spurs supporting woman, and a very young Liverpool fan who takes it really seriously. So I'm going to get in early just so I can see their interactions, because that's what it's about, isn't it, really, at the end of the day.
Well, talk to us about Ball Street then, because obviously you are one of the co-founders of Ball Street, along with Stu. I'm sure everyone knows what Ball Street's all about. And if you don't, I'll drop a link in the description, because I've just done a video with these guys last week talking about my hopes and fears of for United this season, which is it's turned out really nice, actually. It's a good little vid. So I'll drop that in the description below, and I'll throw a link in the comments as well. But what's Ball Street up to at the moment? What's all that about? Because we did the fan league, didn't we, which was awesome. Hope that's coming back again.
Yeah, I think it will be, yeah. I mean, look, it's a weird one, and I've actually probably only got a couple of minutes, so I'll try and do this quick, because the casserole alarm went off a minute ago, which means I don't want the chicken to go rubbery. but yeah, so I guess it's intertwined really with my story. I worked in media. I worked Sky. I worked EMAT, which was like Kiss 100, radio stations like that. And then I worked at TalkSport, and I was there for about 10 years. And I guess through that period, you know, really there's been a lot of disruption. So media has gone from, you know, the newspapers and TV being the heroes to, and you know, companies like The Sun, which at one point was the people's paper, and Sky, and, you know, FIFA, who were the guardians of the game and the soul of football. And as time's gone on, we've realized that a lot of these big companies were actually just operating within their own interests. They were hacking phones, you know, they were sending World Cups to obscure destinations so they could, you know, fill their pockets with brown paper bags. So, you know, as all this was going on, you could see that trust was being extracted from these kind of places and reinvested in real people. And me as a Huddersfield fan working in big media, like, it always used to piss me off that we'd have all these rights, we'd have all these access, but you'd do no content with it, really. There'd be nothing. You might, you know, and on all these media organizations, you might get some news, you might get some facts, but you'd get no insight. And that really used to like piss me off a little bit, essentially. So I started to see an opportunity to actually build fan media and to work with fan media. So I jumped out of TalkSport in, I think, 2011. And me and Stu's a Glasgow Rangers fan, you know, we just started to consult and work for other people in order to start to try and build something in YouTube and in sport. So we started a YouTube channel, but we realized quite quickly that there were people out there that had got millions of pounds, like Fremantle, like Copper 90, who started with 2 million quid, to deploy that infrastructure and that capital against football. So what we did is we did a bit of the other way around. We started to use some of my skills about working with brands and creating big ideas. But rather than delivering that on media, like at TalkSport and on with different presenters on different day parts, started to get passionate fans to work together so that the money actually went to fans to actually make more content for other fans. So that's really what we started out doing. And it's evolved really nicely. I mean, I don't think our YouTube channel's as big as it should be. I don't think that a lot of our social isn't, but Ball Street's just one room in a hotel of different rooms of football channels that we own, that we operate, and that we represent. So, you know, we've got like Instagram accounts, Facebook pages, Twitter accounts. And what we also do is we work with lots of other fan channels and people that are in that game, and we help them generate money out of their passions, and we help collectively. I think what we do is, you know, we drive really good numbers for brands. We can drive trends. We can get, you know, we make video. So everything that you do isn't just Ball Street, that football channel. What we've really been doing is we've been utilizing the skills and the contacts that we've developed in this space to then sell services to brands to help them do it, to make video for them, to do things like the Family Cup, which was essentially a big idea, but brought together and delivered over lots of people's YouTube channels have, you know, built these channels organically, you know, around their passions. So that's kind of what we do and who we are. It's mad, mate, building a business in this world, because it just moves so fast. You know, the disruption's been happening and continues to change. So, you know, it's almost like a sea where the current keeps moving around, you know, and you've got to kind of keep afloat and keep moving. But yeah, it's been super fun as well. So yeah, that's us. And you know, we work with everyone out there, I guess, really in fan media, you know, and want to continue to do that.
Awesome. So yeah, there is some good content on the Ball Street channel, and definitely go and check out mine. I'll throw that in the description below. But Matt, thanks. Thanks for joining us. Final word from you. Where's Huddersfield going to finish this season?
I don't know. I think we've still got a hell of a lot to go, you know. I think that what this last 5-6 games have shown us is that we actually do need more players. We've only had one fit striker for the last kind of 5 weeks. We don't have a number 10 at the moment. So I think that having seen that Wagner has managed to shuffle the pack rather than playing these square pegs in round holes, which I think he was doing, that's given me a bit more encouragement again. But I think the window is important for us. We need to bring in a little bit more quality. We need to have a few new bodies in there. And it's tough to say. I'd like to think that stay up. I think it'd be a nice story for us to stay up. But I think we're definitely going to be between, you know, 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th place.
It's going to be close.
Yeah, there don't look to be anyone really bad, does there in the league?
Palace.
Well, Palace. But even so, like, they then beat Chelsea, and you've got to think they've got like Zaha, Benteke. I know no one's too good to go down, but they've got some good attacking players. I mean, like, what do you think? I know we've just beaten you, so it's hard, but like, what do you think?
I think now that they potentially have got a plan B, I think you might scrape it. But I do think you're right in terms of strength in depth is massively, massively lacking. And I can't imagine you've got a big budget for January. But I think if he signs you know, someone to bolster midfield, defence, and like you said, definitely a striker or a 10 or a bit of a hybrid. I think that can help you. I think you always need someone who's just an out-and-out Gary Goals. Like, Joe, if you could pull in like a Defoe, someone like that, maybe tail end of his career that you know is just going to find you the goals in the odd important game, I think you'd probably manage it. But then it's what's the plan to sustain from that? Or is everybody like you, like, fuck it, let's go back down and have a party and be a big fish? Because I think one of the worst things that could happen would be to be a yo-yo club. You've seen it with West Brom for the longest time. There was up and down, and the turnover of players and staff that you have because of that, that can't be good for the soul of a football club, I don't think. So I think, it'd be interesting to see. I think it's going to be a crazy season. There's so many leagues within the league this season that it's, who knows? You put a run together, you get four or five wins on the bounce, that's the sort of thing that can enable you to stay up.
We've got Liverpool next week, that's the game.
Yeah, you can beat them.
Wagner against Klopp, that's going to be quite interesting.
Well, yeah, if anyone knows him, if anyone knows his style, it's them, isn't it? And if you play football against him, you can probably beat him. We didn't, so we didn't.
Yeah.
Right, Matt, tell everybody where they can follow you, and definitely throw your LinkedIn in there as well, because that's interesting.
Yeah, so, I mean, I do have a YouTube, it's Matt World, WRLD. I do have, I do some odd stuff on there. I do the odd Huddersfield vlog on there, actually. So if you want to see, there's a good video on there of the day that we got promoted and then the Palace game. There's good content on there. But if you're on LinkedIn, then add me on there, because that's really what I'm about, is about my business. I have some really nice chats on there. I had really good, like Steve-O the Madman, I had him in the other day just talking about his Snapchat and some stuff like that. So I always have it's quite nice interviews and conversations with people that work in brand or on platforms or in content or are creators as well. So check me out on LinkedIn, Matt Wilson. I do like daily video on there called LinkedIn Daily. So yeah, check that out.
All right, Matt, thanks for joining us, and I'm sure I'll see you pretty soon.
Yeah, lads, nice one, Steve. Always good to speak to you, mate. Love your stuff.
Laters. Right, thank you for you guys for tuning in. Subscribe, go and give Matt a follow. I'll follow his links in the description. I'll see you in the next one. Laters.